You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee voted to subpoena the heads of Twitter and Facebook this morning. None of the 10 Democrats on the panel were there. They had protested an earlier vote on the nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. The move comes after the social media companies had suppressed or limited links to an unverified story about Joe Biden's son in the New York Post. The New York Post reported on emails that were allegedly taken from a laptop that belonged to Hunter Biden. They suggested that he tried to introduce a top official at a Ukrainian energy company he worked for to his father. Joe Biden called the story a smear. No word on when Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey or Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg would actually testify. Other claims about Hunter Biden's business dealings have surfaced in recent weeks and months. Conservatives say the media has ignored those stories largely. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the media's handling of the Bidens? Were Twitter and Facebook right to limit the spread of that New York Post article, or was that a sign, do you think, of anti-conservative bias? How much does this issue, Hunter Biden's business dealings, matter to you, and how should the media approach stories like this? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Jordan Foley is an assistant professor in the Journalism and Media Production Department in the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. He earned his PhD from UW-Madison. He focuses on political communication and digital media. Jordan, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, before we dig into the twists and turns of this latest story, in general, you've got a son of a presidential candidate engaged in business dealings in other countries. In general, this is fair game for political reporting, right?
Certainly fair game for political reporting. I think the way that people go about covering the story is certainly the bigger question covering all of it. It's not as if stories like these necessarily come out of the blue. A lot of the Hunter Biden-related controversy stretches back all the way to April 2019 and the impeachment proceedings and phone calls between the Trump administration and the recently elected President Zelensky in terms of Rudy Giuliani reaching out to research these kinds of things. So it's not as if this hasn't been in the media already and sort of in that sense, certainly fair game for sort of political jockeying one way or the other, but certainly raises a great deal of questions for people who are tasked with reporting and communicating these things accurately to the people who are trying to decide who to vote for.
And Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, who chairs the Senate's Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, on Fox News last week, he talked about some of the deals, whether he was profiting off the Biden name, what the candidate Joe Biden knew about it. Here's a listen to the senator.
What astounds me is how the press continues to ignore this. You know, we issued our report and the press just ignored it. They said, well, there's nothing illegal here. Well, it's not my job to prove illegality. My job is to do oversight. Get information to inform public policy, but also to inform the public. We gave the press, we gave the public a treasure trove of information that is very troubling, that is just crying to be investigated. And I think what we're starting to see now is the dam's breaking. People are coming forward with more information, and that's what's going to be required.
Is that a fair criticism? Do you think that the press didn't do enough coverage, including after Senator Johnson and his committee issued a report?
Well, I certainly think that the fact that, you know, people like me and you are on talking right now is evidence that that's certainly not the case. And even after social media companies did engage in activities to either limit the spread or distribution of those links, there were still millions and millions and millions of people sharing these stories. And to the extent that people, again, you know, focus on the details that maybe the authors of the report wanted people to focus on, I don't necessarily think they're entitled to that. But, you know, in terms of how people make decisions about how to cover these issues and whether or not they want to cover the sort of speculative nature of things that need to be investigated more to create more verified accounts of maybe what it is that we're exactly looking at are certainly part of the conversation. But I think a lot of the reporting that at least I've seen focuses a lot on the backstories and sort of, you know, how does a news organization come to publish something like this? What kinds of conversations were happening in newsrooms? Where did this story come from? And what can we say about the nature of the information within it? And I've seen quite a bit of reporting and commentary as far as that goes. And the report that was put out by the Senate certainly contains a lot of qualified allegations and pointing to to certain things that that Senator Johnson describes as troubling and need to be investigated. And certainly there is a lot of questions about getting more information and transparency with regard to the story itself and the information within it. And I think journalists have been doing quite a bit of work to attempt to suss those out. And some of the decisions to not run the story that the New York Post decided to run were informed by those exact same principles of attempting to suss those things out. I don't think it's necessarily the media's obligation to fan the flames of speculation around unverified claims where reporters and people and experts surrounding these issues have legitimate concerns about the nature of allegations that you might be able to make at this point, especially considering the timing.
Talking to Jordan Foley from Washington State University, looking at media coverage of stories related to Hunter Biden. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jordan, let's get into this story that mainly prompted this conversation, the New York Post article we've both mentioned. Allegedly, these laptops, depending on which version of the story, show up. And it's a difficult spot for the media because, okay, there's this information out there. It's in one outlet, but a lot of stages of the story would require, it seems like, some more verification. How can a news outlet, especially say a national news outlet, 2 weeks before an election, what's the responsible way, do you think, to try to handle a story like that?
Well, I think that when you're considering covering something like this, especially the nature of the allegations that are involved and certainly the kinds of narratives that are being spun around it, one thing that I would certainly suggest is, as I mentioned, you know, going back to where these stories really started. When did Hunter Biden really become a component of our political discourse? And as I mentioned, these issues extend all the way back to reporting that was happening around the time of the impeachment trials to begin with. We have a lot of information and public reporting associated with Rudy Giuliani, his dealings with Ukraine, the investigations that he's sort of carrying out around those spaces. And so I think in terms of thinking about how to approach covering these issues, that context is crucially, I think, important for telling the story of not just a hard drive that randomly showed up that may or may not contain a treasure trove of information that may be politically beneficial or not to one side or the other, but giving listeners and readers a chance to understand the context of where the story is coming from to begin with, and what is it that we do know that we can verify, that we can say about these things, and making sure that even as we're communicating the fact that people are disagreeing about them, that there is some level of responsibility taken for the kinds of information that is sort of being passed along and can be verified. Noting when these things are unverified is certainly a component of it. Headline writing is certainly something that should be a component of it. I think one thing that makes these things get a lot more press than normal is because it's likely that people are reading headlines and short bits rather than full stories. And so making clear decisions about what kinds of information is legitimate to be highlighting from a story like this and what the real story is and being able to communicate that fairly effectively. And I think in terms of, broadly thinking about covering stories like this, thinking about it in terms of not covering it as a political episode, but covering the themes that have emerged across a campaign that's been reported on for months and months and months now, that we're not just starting from scratch with a story like this, and that we have quite a bit of context to provide readers and listeners to understand not just the unverifiability of many of the central claims in a lot of these stories and the nature of the speculation, but also what we do know about the way that these stories come to be in the first place.
Another concern for media, and as we've seen social media outlets, is are they in effect amplifying disinformation campaigns? We know they're out there. We don't know if this is one of them or not, but we're in a landscape where foreign actors, domestic actors may be trying to spread stories that are false or only partially true. Do you think the media needs to be more wary these days?
Well, they certainly need to be more wary these days about the kinds of information that they pass along. I think in particular for social media companies, they're in a really difficult circumstance. Obviously, you have the subpoenas of Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg to come testify about the nature of the sort of bias on the platforms that they run. And especially when you're running a platform that contains so much user generated content and things like that, the amount of responsibility that we're asking private companies to take on to monitor these very complex information environments makes it really difficult for people to have a transparent understanding of exactly what's going on. Jack Dorsey even came out and declared Twitter's own handling of it to be relatively unacceptable in terms of the clarity with which they talk about the way that they limit the spread of issues like these. So in some ways, it's about being wary. In other ways, it's about being very transparent with your readers, either when you make mistakes or make high stakes decisions about what kinds of content to throttle access to or limit access to in terms of those. And those are certainly things that Republicans are concerned about, but perhaps more from attempting to make it more of a legal and constitutional issue rather than what it sort of really is, which is about ethics, politics, and the nature of media regulation more broadly.
We're talking about the media's handling of Hunter Biden's business dealings. Jordan Foley is our guest, assistant professor of journalism at Washington State University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the story has been undercovered? Is the media treating it fairly? Do you worry about a false, a mis, or disinformation making its way through the media? Call 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation and hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the media's treatment of Hunter Biden's business dealings, Ukraine and China, and how media and social media have handled a report from the New York Post. Jordan Foley is with us from Washington State University, assistant professor of journalism and media production there. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls. Brian is with us in Wausau. Brian, hi.
Hi. So there's a couple reasons why this story is absolutely ridiculous. First of all, the original author of the Times story wouldn't even put their name on the article. They ended up having to put two different reporters' names on the article. The first one, as of April, worked at Fox News and has connections to Roger Stone and Steve Bannon. The second one didn't even know their name was on the article until they saw it in the paper. More importantly, though, the whole thing was propagated by Rudolph Giuliani and Steve Bannon in the first place. Steve Bannon, who's on federal charges right now for fraud. I mean, how can anything he says even be trusted anymore, if you could even trust him in the first place?
Brian, thanks a lot for the call. And he's referring to reports on the reporting there, Jordan, other news outlets trying to track down the provenance of the story and how it ended up at the Post.
Yeah, the story that I believe your caller is referring to is there's a great New York Times story with it's pretty well sourced in terms of the internal strife at the New York Post in terms of who was getting credit and who wasn't, who was writing it, who was willing to sort of take on those things. And I think those are all incredibly legitimate questions when it comes to reporting on stories like this. And ultimately, I think are really great opportunities for people to get a better insight into how journalists in newsrooms make these kinds of decisions, seeing the kinds of what kinds of information would be asked for a journalist if they wanted to put their name next to a story like this. And certainly, as the caller mentioned, credibility concerns associated with the sources from the story, I think, gave people understandable pause even within the organization about how to ultimately handle the story.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to John now with us in Medford. John, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me. I do not feel that the story's being undercovered. I feel it's been covered up. And if Hunter's last name was Trump, I think that the mainstream media would be shouting it from the rooftops 24/7. They have the laptop. I don't think it's about Hunter. I think it's about, as he's referred to, as the big guy is Papa Joe getting 10% for all these dealings.
John, thanks a lot for the call. John, referring to some of the claims that have come out of this there, but John saying the media wouldn't be so reluctant to do this if it were someone in the Trump family involved in the story. What do you think?
It's really interesting, and I think your callers are touching on important things, which is, you know, these assessments of whether or not there is appropriate amounts of coverage equitably across people, across the political spectrum, and these allegations of bias are such a long-standing component of not just election campaigns, but American politics more generally. And I think what we're seeing in these back-and-forth claims between conservatives saying that people are trying to censor them and not get the story out, and people from the other side saying we're really just trumping up a lot of stories from people who have questionable political backgrounds and maybe, as your caller mentioned, are you know, facing charges of some sort for fraud, that those kinds of allegations, both back and forth, are incredibly difficult to verify and come to an agreement about. And part of that stems from, again, as I mentioned, the transparency that we get from the companies that control this kind of information, and fundamentally how we sort of, you know, since we've been dealing with since the 2016 campaign, what's the nature of the political truth? How do we come to decide it? And how much are those painted by the political predispositions that we may have going into assessing the evidence itself? So it really creates intractable problems for people who are in the media trying to generate unbiased coverage, and for social media companies who are attempting to regulate third-party content and posts that they have to sort of adjudicate while, you know, maintaining the kinds of business and political and social relationships that they need.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Laura now in Kenosha County. Laura, hi.
Yeah, hello. I think that these are basically the distractions. They're put out there so that the press focuses more of the precious time of election coverage on this subject. I mean, Hunter Biden's emails, it's ridiculous, especially so close to the election. And rather than concentrating more on the things that the American people might be interested in, like our president and what he's hiding from the American people as far as his releasing his taxes and stuff. I believe he's afraid to.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call. Jordan, that also raises the question of, I guess, of proportionality, how much weight you put on stories you cover, one candidate or another, one issue or another.
Absolutely. And you know, when you talk about how much coverage you can really get on one side or the other, I think there are a lot of people who think of that in terms of whether or not we're covering them the same amount, whether or not someone is, you know, getting the same amount of minutes on the air. And you see the same kinds of conflicts come in when you talk about fact checking more generally, in terms of are we checking facts of people too much? Are we giving them too much coverage? And there's plenty of research that suggests the amount of free media that Donald Trump and his campaign received in the 2016 election. And as your caller mentions, there are certainly incentives that people have, particularly in the month of October prior to an election, to create controversy that maybe perhaps distracts from weaker components of another candidate. And so I do think it really strikes at the heart of, you know, what are the things that matter to the people who are about to go to the polls? Do people really care about Hunter Biden's emails? And if some of the allegations in either the Senate report or these stories are true, what does it say about what we would be doing if we did care about those things as much as we purport to in terms of what voters ultimately care about? If we're concerned about these suspicious activities reports alluded to in the Senate committee report on Hunter Biden's transactions, well, then we might be more interested in the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists uncovering FinCEN files that have thousands and thousands of suspicious activities reports from a number of politicians that may illustrate exactly what your caller is talking about. And so I do think that when we talk about that episodic versus thematic understanding of what these stories are really about, that thematic focus really might be able to refocus, you know, who the center and the protagonist of these stories really is, which should ultimately be, especially in this context, voters and what their interests are and what really matter to them. And I think it's incredibly important to be discerning about the extent to which we're covering things because political media elites are putting pressure on people to cover the things that they want them to cover, and what that coverage is ultimately for, which is informing voters and letting them know so that they can make informed decisions about who to vote for come November.
Time for one more call. I think Charlie is with us in Platteville. Charlie, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. When you first introduced the story and the guest this afternoon, the issue of whether the media was conservatively biased in censoring maybe some of the things that relatively come from the conservative. One of my questions would be then, do we have that same problem coming from liberal sides of the argument that they are complaining about their stories being squelched? But I think the real story, excuse me, and the issue has to be, what is truthful, whether it's conservative or liberal, whether it's accurate or not? And I'm wondering what our guest says about how to confirm whether it's accurate versus we just want to get a dramatic story out because it gives us viewer ratings.
Interesting. Charlie, thanks for the call. Jordan.
Well, I think your caller points to, I think, a really, really crucial, important thing, which is that the purpose of all of this reporting should be to suss out the truth. I mean, whether or not we're covering one person more than the other should be somewhat secondary to whether or not we're providing factual information. And to the point being made, you know, are we following a sensationalist story, or are we doing the work to really track down the facts? I think that's what a lot of media organizations are trying to do. And I imagine many of them were pitched this story and decided to turn it down because they were unable to do so. And that story didn't really make it out. And many of them, in light of not being able to get more information about this hard drive or its contents, because the center of the story revolves around political actors who are in control of the information that contains all of the salacious material, it makes it very difficult for a journalist or someone from outside to really pry into what really is the truth there. And so I think that's why when journalists and other media members make decisions to say, okay, we have these unverified claims and we certainly have a deadline for a story that we need to get out or write, that what do we really have time to focus on? What can we get out there that is truthful, accurate, and provides enough context so that when our viewers and readers do see these claims elsewhere, that they have enough information to make actually an informed decision about exactly what your caller was mentioning, which is, what is the truth? Can we suss that out? And can we separate our own political affiliations or biases from the underlying content of the allegations and the scandals that we really want to make the center of our conversation prior to an election?
Jordan, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jordan Foley, assistant professor of journalism and media production at Washington State University, looking at the media's treatment of the ongoing Hunter Biden story.